Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 212, Science Faction Kingdom.
Science Faction Saudi Arabia, that's what you're saying?
The kingdom? No. As you guys may have heard last week, we are going through the taxonomic ranks in biology. We started with the most basal, which is domain. Again, as we covered last week, domain was just kind of added in the last few decades as we were understanding biology better. Kingdom used to be the most basal split. It used to be the first split you went to. Now it's the second. We started our first split in domain. Remember, we had three different branches that came off. We had bacteria, we had archaea, and we had eukaryotes, which include us and plants and animals and everything else. We have now split those groups into even further groups, into kingdoms. So you might hear about the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom. Our own eukaryote domain is usually spread into four different kingdoms: plants, animals, fungi, and protists, which are essentially single-celled little things like amoebas running around. And
running.
Well, some of them have flagella, so
they're like
swimming.
They're like, soon.
On the other side, in bacteria, you have gram-negative and gram-positive kingdoms, which are kind of big differences if you guys are microbio people. But basically, if you think about it this way, you can think about it as a division of current living animals, and that's how we use it. But you can also kind of think about this as our past history, because we all share a last common ancestor. We share a last common ancestor with every other human being, but also with chimps and gorillas, but also with all mammals, but also with all animals and plants and everything else. We know that all life descended from a single living thing, and so each of these kind of mark a division, a boundary in which we have separated from those. The most basal being domain, where we separated from bacteria and archaea. Then next up, kingdoms, where we have separated now from plants, from fungi, from protists. And as we go through time, you can kind of think of this as a trip through time, we are going to continue to separate and separate until we end up with just our species, Homo sapien, and we've gotten rid of everything else.
So gram positive and gram negative, is that like Lindsey Graham and Alexander Graham?
Yeah. It's just, do you like Lindsey Graham or do you not like Lindsey Graham? Like, if you enjoy a somewhat feminine southern drawl, then yes, you are a gram positive bacteria.
I'm a big fan of Lindsey Graham and Michelle Bachmann's husband.
Yeah. And speaking of Michelle Bachmann's husband, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how you doing?
Doing great. I just realized I could probably channel or arrange the drop-in of Michelle Bachmann's husband if any relevant conversation.
Is he a scientist? I mean, I guess he did run one of those Fight the Gay Away clinics. Like, maybe that was...
We get Ken Ham on this fucking show. Do you think he's just as science as Ken Ham?
And speaking of our actual scientist for the evening, none other than Dr. Allison Gill. Doctor, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am doing great, especially because I listened to Mueller She Wrote this week, which was incredibly interesting. You guys have better and better episodes as the world slowly goes to shit. So
thank you.
Go ahead and check out Mueller She Wrote, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R. And if you are a Podbean listener, like many of ours are, go ahead and like Mueller She Wrote on Podbean. And when you're not doing that, check out our newly designed website at www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we didn't get to. But for now, let's get right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
I'd like to mention before we get into science articles that we didn't mention the acronym that.
Oh my gosh, how did I forget?
But we're past it now, so we might as well just keep on trucking.
How did I forget that we were teaching?
No sense circling back.
We were teaching.
You're such a sadist.
Yeah. We were teaching our audience about a mnemonic to help them remember. Damien, thank you. I forgot the mnemonic. That's the main problem.
I need this.
You're such a cock-sucking sadist.
Yeah.
Damien covertly hides his erection as Bobby's.
No, I'm sure. I think Damien kills podcast comedy on otherwise fucking great Science Faction. I believe that is what you were referring to.
Oh, phooey. I didn't think we'd go back through it if I brought it up.
Nor do you think that Damien knows plenty of cocks offer fucking great sex.
I'm just looking to advertise at this point.
All of those very important for, of course, remembering the taxonomic ranks. Thank you, Damien. Thank you for bringing us back to that. I had almost forgot it. I already slipped my mind. I almost think, Allison, though, he's not a sadist.
He like just the gimp from Pulp Fiction.
No, I think it's a narcissism. He'll just take any attention he can get because his name is in both of those mnemonics, so he wants to spread them as much as possible.
Yeah, and it is more masochistic than,
yeah, that's
than,
true.
Than the Marquide. So,
all right, let's start with article number one. Brain Scans and Your Right to Lie. This is a super interesting article that came out, and it's a mixture of science and ethics. We come to these positions all the time. Whenever we reach certain levels of scientific advancement, we have to think of the ethics behind what we're doing. And one of them that's coming further and further along is the ability to tell what a person is thinking and be able to tell if they're being deceptive, if they have memories or familiarity with a certain thing, and we can do these through brain scans. Sometimes this is as complicated as an fMRI. Sometimes it's easy as putting like an EEG type machine on the head.
I love that. And that ethical question was actually touched on in an episode of Black Mirror recently where they attach it to your head and they get to see your memories in real time. It's kind of a sort of a salacious idea.
Isn't this kind of the automatization of our legal system?
I mean, in a way, but isn't that kind of what we want? Wouldn't that make our legal system a little bit less biased towards like certain minorities if all of a sudden it was, no, we are going to objectively tell if you did this crime or not?
As somebody who's lived his whole life lying and getting away with shit, like I think having some strict boundaries growing up would have helped if I knew I couldn't lie my way out of something. So, yeah.
On the other side, growing up as somebody who was in the military where everyone has my DNA, fingerprints, and blood samples, I'm for just turning all that shit in and having cameras everywhere. But again, the bias inherent in the system is the problem, not the science.
I do like that you were raised as a super soldier in the military from a very young age.
I was
6 years old.
I was born from the foam of my mother's head in full armor.
Very nice, Athena. I know a lot of you are probably thinking, but wait, we've had polygraphs for a long time. I am going to tell you something. You might have heard me say this on Science Faction before. If you have not, listen up. This might be one of the most useful things you ever get out of this show. Polygraphs are complete bullshit.
Bullshit!
They do not tell that you're lying. Now, I should amend that. A polygraph is measuring something. It's not measuring whether or not you're lying. It's measuring your autonomic functions. It's measuring your sweat or your perspiration level, your heart rate, your blood pressure, your breathing rate. And all of these things can correlate with lying. In fact, they frequently do. However, it is not that lying causes these things. We are looking at a correlation. And more so, what's even more disturbing about it is, it tends to not work on the people we want it to work on the most.
True sociopaths do not have autonomic nervous responses to lying. It's just second nature to them. So.
And neither do people who are trained to lie. And who's going to be trained to lie but somebody you don't want lying? And so you can't...
No one here, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I will literally, I put this test out to you. I can pass a lie detector test. So hook me up right
because
now.
Because you are a psychopath.
No, not at all.
I know you. You are a psychopath.
No, it is very easy.
So I hear the FBI is hiring.
Yeah, right? You can control your autonomic nervous functions when you just practice it enough. And I used to do this all the time after I learned some of these techniques on controlling your heart rate and all this kind of stuff. I would go into regular doctor checkups and fuck with the nurse by, you know, you bring your heart rate down into the 30s when they have you on the blood pressure machine and stuff. You can do this stuff. There are very simple techniques that you can use to affect these things. There are even things where they will ask you basically baseline questions to determine how nervous you are asking regular questions, and that's when people have a tack in their shoe or they contract their sphincter or they do something that raises those things up, and then all of a sudden it looks like when they are lying that they're not.
My plan for beating it is just to use my natural ability to sweat, and I will just sweat profusely through every control question.
You're the sweatiest guy I know.
I thought you were going to say to contract your sphincter.
How do you think I work up the sweat?
Yeah.
So everyone's like, that's a snapping pussy right there.
Sir, stop kegling for the exercise. It throws off the machine.
I do think that'd be funny if you just went to the gym. You sat down on the bench press. You just really worked to sweat. Everybody's like, what's he doing? Oh, you don't want to know.
Technically, I could do this at home, but I like being in this environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The polygraphs are completely unreliable to an extreme degree. It is not telling whether or not you're lying. It is telling whether or not you're nervous, or even more accurately, whether or not you're having these nervous responses. That is why it is banned from courtrooms. It's not banned from courtrooms because we said, hey, it would be unfair to tell if that person's lying. It's banned because it's not a real test. Now that we're getting to the point where...
But oddly, witness testimony is not banned.
True.
And that's almost even faultier than the lie detector test.
I think one of the reasons, one of the thoughts is, you know, yes, we know, and we're finding out more and more every day, how unreliable witness testimony is. However, we can understand that that's a subjective thing. The problem is lie detectors would be presented like they're scientific evidence when they're clearly not, right?
Yeah.
And so now that we're getting to the point where you can scientifically look at a person's thoughts, or at least the way their brain is reacting, and look at, okay, are they using the part of their brain that you would use to deceive someone? Are you using the part of the brain that we know is part of lying? Are you using a part of the brain? Sometimes it's, hey, do you have familiarity with this crime? We can bring stuff up to you. And if you access the memory part of your brain as opposed to the novel learning something new part of your brain, we know that you have a familiarity with this part of the crime.
What if you're somebody likes to spice up a story? You know, like you're like a grandfather. Uh-huh. And you like to put your spin on it.
Right.
You know, like...
You're worried that this guy's going to get dragged into court and he's going to have to perform with an fMRI?
I'm saying that my grandfather would be caught lying on every fucking thing he said.
All right, I admit it. The fish was only this big. Fine, you happy?
Well, what? I mean, aren't experts who figured out how to beat lie detector tests just going to figure out how to beat this? Or are these completely involuntary
and that's a great question.
Not able to be overcome?
That's a great question. You know, how we control our physical reactions is a controllable thing, even to the point of your heart rate to some extent and other stuff. I don't believe that anybody really has the ability to control their brain in that same fashion.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention.
That's true. And maybe that will come out. Maybe it'll come out that further along the line, there are people with abnormal brain structures that are
able to give you a clean urine sample right now.
But, we and I will talk after the show.
And you're a female? What? You're pregnant.
It's my understanding that you can't ask me this.
The bad news is that you're pregnant. The good news is you have great anal sphincter muscles. That these are just top notch.
Thank you.
If it does turn out that this is something you can't control, because keep in mind, some of this is what part of your brain you use for different functions. That's not controllable. I can't use the occipital region to start interpreting sound. That is where I interpret vision. That is just the way my brain is
built.
No, but
maybe you can direct it when you're asked.
Maybe.
Could I taint the memories, though? Like, for example, if I knew that I murdered somebody, right? Could I imagine a fake story over and over again until I'm reciting that fake story from memory? And then can I imagine the murder in such a way over and over again until when I have to imagine how this person's murdered?
You're trying to create a Minority Report-esque situation where you can come fall back. I don't know. And the answer is, you know, we would have to have a lot of studies to determine this. What we do know right now is it's quite accurate, you know? And then we get to a certain level of accuracy where we say, okay, to this extent it is accurate. You know, we always hear the DNA things. They don't say this is a DNA match. They say there is a 1 in 5 billion chance that it is somebody other than this person. Or, you know, and we can get to maybe that level of certainty with a lot of studying. The question would become, do we allow that into a courtroom? You know, if we can say, let's say this theoretical world, we've done a bunch of studies, man, this is like DNA. We have gotten to whatever certainty we can with DNA. It's the same level with these brain scans. We can tell if you're lying or not. Do we bring them in? Does somebody have the right to lie to the court about a crime that they did commit?
Well, you have the right to attempt to lie to the court.
I mean,
seeing as perjury is illegal, it's almost the age-old, you know, do we allow instant replay in baseball?
Yeah.
Like, should we just let the umps call it and that's the call and and our justice system just shakes out that way? Or if we can be sure, do we want to be sure?
Because there is this idea you have this right to privacy and, you know, you have an inherent right in the Constitution and in this country to privacy. And there's the idea of privacy of thoughts. But at the same time, I think a lot of the protections we have in courtrooms are like kind of holdovers. They're vestigial appendages of this time where we couldn't tell if you were lying, you know?
And on the innocent side, if you could go into my brain and it would exonerate me, I would want you to.
Right. So that so the real question becomes two different ones. It becomes, one, should you have the right as an individual who's being accused of a crime to take this test and then submit it into court evidence?
Yes.
Number two.
And then if you say no...
Yes. First of all, on that one, I think that it should be hands down, assuming that the science is there to show that it's accurate. I think that's a hands down. I think you should be able to show your own innocence that way. Number two, should the prosecution be able to force you to take this test in the same way that they can a DNA test to see if you are guilty of a crime?
Oh, I think the answer would be if there is enough criminal intent or probable cause, you have to have enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this is warranted. And it would be kind of like obtaining a warrant, I would think.
I would think if you're on trial, right? So you're on trial. And the same situation where we say they're allowed to take your DNA for whatever reason you're on trial. I think you should be able to do that. And I know I'm very much into personal liberties and personal rights. And I believe that you have the right to be innocent to proving guilty. And I stand by that in pretty much all cases. I think that idea of this privacy was put into place because it was the only way to ensure innocent people were not taken through the justice system. And once you can take the innocent out by saying, we know this person is guilty, I think they lose the right to that privacy.
Yeah, but you can't say that you know the person is guilty before the jury does.
But you do. I mean, the jury is
deciding.
You
can say there's by the preponderance of the evidence.
Right.
I mean, it is exactly the same principle as to why a warrant jives with the Fourth Amendment.
Sure.
It's the same principle. You would just have to figure out how to, I guess, ethically put it together to make it a warrantable thing.
And a lot of people think the opposite, though. They believe that even if you've committed a crime, you have the right not to essentially divulge that.
Well, they're guilty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Big felon is a huge lobby in Washington.
Unfortunately, they can't vote. So
generally, people who obstruct justice are hiding something. Not that that has anything to do with anything that's going on right now.
Right, absolutely. Listen to Mueller's report. But you have to put it into context. You know, where would you allow it? You know, would we give somebody a brain scan to see if they're lying when it comes to, I didn't see the speed limit sign? You know, like, what limit would we get to the point where you've committed some level of crime that we are able to then scan you?
And just draw the line at a felony or something like that.
I think
a violent crime.
Yeah, I think certainly
bullshit. Small claims court. I'm tired of people lying. No,
Wapner.
I think you draw the line at any court, small claims, whatever.
If it works, we should have it in Judge Judy just for the entertainment value. Oh,
well, first of all, you couldn't because Judge Judy is mostly fake. And so, like, if you actually were to scan
entertainment. You can do whatever you want.
But if you were to scan their brains, nobody would be telling the truth because they're actors.
I am super pro this technology. But as soon as it becomes like a phone app and I can no longer lie to get out of like social situations or something, like people can't.
Why are you late? Yeah. I had a flat tire again.
Keep science in the courtroom where it belongs.
Oh, and also, they aren't actors. I've been on a court show.
They are not all actors, but I have.
Joe Brown?
I was on Christina's court.
I've known a few people who have gotten brought in to
Sometimes they need people. Yeah, sometimes they just
I wouldn't claim that they are all actors. I am saying they sweeten the stories on a lot of them. So a lot of them will start off with like, this person didn't pay me rent. And then it becomes, well, do you have a friend who you can pretend to be in a love triangle with? I know that happened.
Ours didn't do that. That was weird.
Maybe Christina's legit.
Christina's legit, you guys. I don't think she's on the air anymore. That's probably why. Conspiracy.
She didn't sell out to SAG.
And then it becomes, okay, so let's say we go, you can use it in court. Can your employer use it to ask you questions? I'm not saying like you're trying to be an FBI agent or something, but you have a regular corporate job. Can your employer bring you in and be like, okay, we hooked you up to the brain scan. Have you ever stolen from a company before that you've worked for? Do you ever cheat on your timesheet?
If I were an employer, which I have been, I would not want to do that. I would never hire anyone. I would never be able to hire anyone. Everyone's done some fucked up shit.
But there would be some.
Except FBI agents.
Right. There would be some questions you had, right? Like, there would be some ones that would be pertinent. Like, are you planning to embezzle from me? That would be a pertinent question.
Oh, from me, yeah. But have you ever stolen anything from a workplace in the past?
But that could be a pertinent question, too. Do you think it would be legal or would it be moral for an employer to then have that as a prerequisite for your employment?
I do, considering that you can't ask about disabilities, so maybe being a dickhead is a disability. It'll end up being under Title IX or something.
I'm thinking if the questions are right, I wouldn't have a problem with it, but I'm also thinking, sitting in this interview, if somebody asked me while I'm attached to this brain scanner, all right, one last question, Jamie. Do you have a 5-hour energy drink filled with clean urine under your scrotum right now?
Right.
And I'd have to just stand up and walk out. Like, you got me.
Well, by the way, for those of you who are wondering, why is lie detector tests? They use them for the feds. Like, if you wanted to go get a job with the FBI or the Border Patrol or something right now, they will lie detector test you.
They
will.
And
you might say, why do they use it? Well, one, it
and I've had straight edge friends fail that fucker, too.
For one, it does reveal a lot of people are lying. So remember, we talked about that correlation. It doesn't mean that there's no relation whatsoever. But number two, the number one way lie detectors are effective as either a deterrent, meaning the person who already has that history of wanting to do something won't take the test, they won't apply because they know they have to take the polygraph and they believe in it. Or number two, which is a very similar thing, people literally just break down and tell the lie detector guy because it's a very intimidating environment. Mm-hmm. They do a couple of questions. The way they set up the test, it makes it seem like they do know they can tell a lie. They sell it by they'll ask you a few questions. The guy is pretending he doesn't know you. He'll ask you a few questions. He goes, is your name John Smith? And then you say no. And you go, okay, you're lying. So your name is John Smith. He's like, oh, fuck, how do you know? Do you live here? Where do you live? Like, and they'll be able to make it seem like they can tell it from the test when in fact it's like a cold read, except they have the information laid out in front of them. And then you go, holy shit, this guy can tell I'm lying. And then you tell them. That is the biggest way they find lies on polygraphs, is admittance to the lie detector administrator.
When you do the CIA polygraph, I hire actors that look like your parents and just shake their head disappointedly through the window.
My favorite is when you join the military, they have called the moment of truth, okay? They put you in this room and they just ask you, have you ever done drugs? And then they ask me that and I'm all, yeah. And they go, okay, I'm going to ask you again. Have you ever done drugs? And I'm like, yes. And they go, I'm going to ask you one more time, like with big eyes and their eyebrows up. Have you ever done drugs? And I'm like, no. And they go, get on the bus. You're good to go. So that's their lie detector. They know if they had to disqualify people for smoking weed in high school, nobody would be in the military. We would have no military.
Absolutely.
Yeah, your guy was way cooler than my guy. My guy, I didn't smoke at that point. I was like, yeah, I smoked like a puff in high school. And he's like, well, you told me, so legally I have to put it down. I had a fucking narc recruiter. And so like on the rest of my military records, I saw like years later, smoked pot in high school one time.
Yeah.
Followed me forever.
That's in my jacket somewhere, I'm sure. Because that's exactly what happened. Weed one time in high school. Swear to God. And now it's like...
You can no longer run for president. Sorry.
I can't join the FBI. That's for fucking sure.
And then think of what it means in our society when all of a sudden your partner can be like, why are you home so late? And you're like, I was working late. Okay, tomorrow we're going to a lie detector facility. We're going to go see what was really going on. Like, think of what that would mean for our society. I actually think it would be good. I think it would be good if people were accountable to the truth in some way.
I think the pendulum would be hard at first. Yeah. It would be chaotic, kind of like...
Because we live in a lying society.
When you just, like, if you opened a free market somewhere, all of a sudden things would crash and be fucked up, but eventually it would right itself. I think that's kind of how it would go, too.
Yeah, and you got to think of what it would eliminate in our society. It would eliminate things like
relationships.
Either cheating or relationships, right?
Marriage, bye-bye. No, I don't know.
Our current political environment?
Yeah, it would eliminate people who fake their job resume. It would eliminate so many things.
Well, let's not attack people who fake their job resumes. Let's not hit them too hard.
That's right. That's right. I do call you a comedian on this show. All right, let's move on to article number 2, another NASCA destruction. This is a very sad one, guys. This involves the Nazca Lines. If you guys are not familiar, the Nazca Lines are gigantic geoglyphs in the deserts in the south coast of Peru. They're basically gigantic pictures of different animals. There are some that are anthropomorphic people. They're very, very precise, geometrically done, beautifully done things done by the natives there about 2,000 years ago. They were very famously part of Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods, where he theorized that these were people talking to aliens, and they would draw these big pictures so the aliens knew where to come, because it was thought you can only see them from an airplane. And you can see them best from an airplane, but you can actually see them from the surrounding hillsides, which is why they built them. The natives wanted to show off their power to neighboring tribes. Look, we've changed the landscape. It's very impressive.
Could it have prevented an alien invasion?
Perhaps? It could have. Like, it probably did.
We could do this.
What if there's a guy down there, like Will Smith, who's going to punch us?
They were early dick pics.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, some geoglyphs do have dicks, but they're very beautifully done. And if you haven't seen them before, go ahead and look them up. They're incredibly precise. They're done with incredible geometric ability. You wonder how somebody on the ground could have done this, because some of these stretch many hundreds of feet. And how would you do that and make these perfectly straight lines and these gigantic pictures like that? And the answer is math. So they would draw them out beforehand. They would use what's called a three-pole math system, which is if you want to make a super straight line super, super far, you just need three guys with three poles. And you go and you line up those three poles and you got a perfectly straight line. It used a lot of very advanced math, a lot of intelligence. They're gorgeous reminders of this Nazca culture that lived out there. And to me personally, they have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart, because every archaeologist in their undergrad education has to go off and do a field school. I did mine down in Pisco, right near the Nazca lines. Did a lot of work in that culture, in that community. Came back up here, and we have our own version in California called the Blythe Intaglios, which are another huge group of geoglyphs. They're about 3 hours outside of San Diego, near the Arizona border. And I did a lot of work taking pictures and doing some interesting papers that I presented on the geoglyphs out here in Blythe. So I have a strong affinity for these. You have to understand, the way they're made is by going to this desert pavement, which is essentially white sand with these black rocks everywhere. And you clear out the rocks and dig some little trenches, and you have essentially created a picture or a negative image by clearing those rocks away. And because this desert, this is one of the driest places on Earth, when I was down there, we were working in an adobe tambo, which is a mud brick structure that still had paint on it from the Inca era. This is outside. It gets so little rain, approximately a quarter inch a year, that it won't take the paint off mud from 700 years ago.
Fun fact, the tambo was invented by Tom Baudet.
It was not invented by Tom Baudet, and no one will leave the light on for you.
We'll leave the paint on for you.
So these are amazing archaeological relics. They are absolutely just spectacular and super, super rare, especially this kind of preservation. If you ever get a chance to go down to South America, you should see them. Well, unfortunately, what happened this week, which was really sad, is that we had some more destruction of some of these. The Pan American Highway, which goes all the way from the United States to the south tip of South America, happens to go right through the Nazca lines, right near them. And what happened was a trucker was on the Pan American Highway. He came to a toll. He didn't want to pay the toll, so he started off-roading. And even though there's plenty of signs that tell you you're near the Nazca lines, you can't pull over, you can't get off-road, and he just off-roaded through some Nazca lines and completely demolished parts of it, leaving these big, giant wheel scars. If you can go to our website and check out the pictures, their wheel scars are easily 2 feet deep in some places, and just completely trashed this one part of it.
It's a very culturally insensitive sequel to Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, way to get way away from this South American chips to cut through these Nazca lines, Hoss.
Cannonball Run 4. Quattro.
And they arrested the guy, obviously, but they could only really hold him for a little bit. And
plus he's Burt Reynolds. You can't, like, yeah. I mean, come on.
They gave him, like, a fine. He's like, oh, my truck was breaking down. I had to pull over to fix it. It was complete bullshit. But they
what
couldn't do.
Dick.
Yeah, they don't have as strong a protection, so they couldn't do much to him. He's already gone. He's out. He's fine. He's living his life, driving trucks through more completely unique cultural resources that can never be repaired.
Don't give him a job on Easter Island.
Right.
I already got a job in China with the Great Wall.
The area he disturbed was about 50 meters by 100 meters, so it was not insignificant in its size.
Jesus.
And the disturbance itself is not insignificant either. You might ask, can it be repaired? There are ways to repair it. We had issues with our Blythe intaglios, with our geoglyphs here in California in the 1960s. People had started off-roading after the 40s when you were able to buy these surplus Jeeps from the Army after World War II. People started doing a lot of off-roading. They damaged a lot of them. So we built fences around them, and then we ended up repairing them, quote-unquote, which is they brought the university students out from Imperial Valley College and had them rebuild the geoglyphs. Here is the problem.
The university students.
Yes. Here is the problem. And this was what my paper was on in 2012, which was people were looking at the geoglyphs, and they're like, look at some of these big geoglyphs. And they're like, wait, there's a horse geoglyph here. Well, horses went extinct in the Holocene in the Americas. And so if there's a horse geoglyph here, that means it was post-contact with Europeans, which means all these geoglyphs aren't prehistoric, they're proto-historic. They overlap the historic period. They're here after white people came. So they essentially said these giant geoglyphs in California are not that important because they're proto-historic and they're not that old, and everybody shouldn't complain about trying to preserve them so much. I did some research in 2011, 2012 using high-intensity cameras that absorb different wavelengths of light that can tell whether or not a rock has been shifted over recently or a long time ago. And what I found is when the students rebuilt those geoglyphs, they used their own interpretation. And it looked like a horse, but in fact, when I did a lot of the ultraviolet studies of the light coming off and the rocks tipped over, when you looked at the old image, it actually had instead of a L-shaped tail like a horse, it had a straight down tail. The face was about half as long. The back had a different slump to it, and it turns out it wasn't a horse, it was a mountain lion. So it was a mountain lion geoglyph that they had rebuilt to be a horse, but then the argument was made they were not prehistoric and not that important. So when you say, can you rebuild them? Technically, yes.
All geoglyphs matter.
Yeah.
Little Zep rocks on the horse's ass.
Yeah. Well, you can, but you're never going to have that authentic picture back. And you might do something where you ended up causing more damage than was originally there in the first place. You might actually damage the thing more. These things are super sensitive. They're hard. You can't even, if you're an archaeologist and you work in the area, you have to wear these big carpet things on your feet. They look like snowshoes so that you're not impacting and leaving foot trails when you're going through the area. It's super strict, which brings us to the last time the Nazca lines were horribly impacted, which was actually a much worse impact. And that was in the 2014 Lima Climate Conference when Greenpeace decided it would be a great idea to go out there and fuck up the geoglyphs. They did so by laying out huge posters and huge signs and stuff that basically called attention to their movement. Before this day, I was very pro-Greenpeace. I was the guy who would actually give them a few bucks outside of Vons. Since this day, I tell them to fuck off every time I see them. Because this permanently impacted one of the major geoglyphs, the hummingbird geoglyph, in the Nazca lines. You can still to this day see all the damage they caused. It's significant amount of damage because they just walked on out there. Again, they didn't have the things on their feet. They started laying down their posters with big bricks weighing everything down so it didn't fly away. You can still see the C in the Greenpeace sign. It is embedded into the earth out there in those geoglyphs. And they caused a whole bunch of damage too. They ended up throwing one of their guys underneath the bus, who I think got like a 4-year sentence. But most of the other people essentially got away scot-free. And that's always really annoying to me. It's annoying when you have a cause that you decide is more important than something else that's really important. And you're like, no, I know these are 2,000 years old. And again, Greenpeace, I was on your side before this. But we really need to send a message to everybody at the climate summit.
We covered that. You made them, you declared them science fighters.
I did.
A rather ambiguous title for how much anger you have.
My split with Greenpeace happened when a nuclear reactor, eight of them, came on a Navy ship into the Sea of Japan. And Greenpeace was there protesting on their boats saying, get your dirty nuclear shit out of our ocean, as if we just drain nuclear water, coolant water, into the ocean.
Well, what's funny is when you instead run diesel, you actually do drain stuff into the ocean. It's just kind of the way it works. And that is much worse, assuming you are accounting for that nuclear material at the end, than a nuclear reactor.
Trying to explain the cleanliness of nuclear energy over coal to somebody in Greenpeace is infuriating.
And just trying to explain to them that the physics of a nuclear reactor mean that, no, it cannot actually cause a nuclear explosion. That is not the way that this works.
Greenpeace lost me when they started throwing perfectly good rancid butter at honorable Japanese whalers.
I liked that. I was a big fan of the rancid butter thing, actually. I dug going after the whalers.
Just tried to provide the world with delicious whale meat.
That is when I started giving them money, actually, when they were doing the whole Sea Shepherd toss.
All right, here's $5.
Yeah, yeah.
But nuclear's good.
I want this to go to butter. Just in fact, you know what? We're inside a grocery store.
Where can I get me rancid butter? Walgreens won't sell it.
Unfortunately, these things are permanently damaged. We can never get them back. And that's the same with every prehistoric site. I give a speech sometimes when I'm doing cultural resources awareness, where I make this statement, which is, we have a finite number of prehistoric sites on the earth today. We will have less tomorrow, and we will never have more. So every time one of these gets damaged, it's something that you can never replace. It's something you can never come back
from. Like my brain cells.
That's right. Like your brain. Well, no, I think there's neurogenesis things. But, you know, generally.
They're not the same.
All right. Let's move right on to everybody's favorite game. I call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Real quick question. Uh-huh. Finite means a sexy night, right?
Yeah. Like a fine night.
Too fine.
Did you see Heath Ledger in A Knight's Tale?
It
was a fine night. All right. I call BS is a game where I read four science news articles, and my panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. Are you guys ready to play?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm ready to play.
Damien, you are coming off a 2-time losing streak. It's probably like 8 losing streaks, but I just remember the last 2 from Allison demolishing you with a perfect score. Just plenty of punches.
There were 2 ties back to back. Allison and I met on the intellectual field of combat, and we came out equals.
Who goes to the tie go?
I believe it goes to the amateur, the contender.
No, it goes to the scientist. And if you remember, this would be like if Damien, every single time in baseball, the runner makes it at the exact same time the ball makes it, and he stays there, and he's like, but I caught the ball! I caught it at the same time! I want the points for the tie!
Okay, when do I get to go to bat, then? When's my turn at bat?
When you get a degree! All right, article number 1.
I'm to your right. I have the right of way.
Article number 1, new research suggests you can train mosquitoes to leave you alone by bothering them. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Is this science? Hey, mosquito, want to come watch Paul Blart Mall Cop at my place? Got plenty of Zimas, dude.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, man, I got Chumbawamba. It's going to be the house with Chumbawamba bumping. You're going to fucking love it, bro.
The mosquitoes have really peculiar taste.
Quick question, mosquito. Who let the dogs out, bro?
Not only is the mosquito leaving, but Allison has left the room. All right, Allison, is this science?
I'm going to say science, too, because if you put Smash Mouth on, they disappear.
We're all stars, mosquito bro.
Article number 2, new research suggests that in teenage boys, the ratio of the length of their index finger to their ring finger is a good indicator of their athletic ability. Damien, is this science or bad science?
As somebody who starred in sports...
The movie that you made?
I was on a Star Search. They used to have an athletics category, and I'd like just go and do a bunch of push-ups as a kid.
What's funny is I actually went to school with Damien. He did do quite well in sports, but even I don't believe him, having lived that life, given that introduction. I starred in sports.
I was the Reggie Bush of San Diego.
Occasionally I stood up in comedy.
The joke being Reggie Bush is the Reggie Bush of San Diego.
Yes, that's very good. Days of science or bad science?
I don't know how my hands would stack up. It's whatever my hands are. So I'm going to say science.
Okay.
Now, are you saying the closer they are in length, proximity, the more athletic they are?
The ratio of the index finger to the ring finger.
Yeah, the lower the ratio, the higher the ratio. Like, what am I looking at? The further apart they are, the better you are?
The closer that ratio approaches to one.
The better. Okay.
I should also say this study sounds like it came out of the same institute that, like, promotes phrenology today in this time.
Yeah, they're, like, measuring finger and skull shape.
And this is males.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dang. Science.
All right. Article number 3, a recent carcass in Russia was dined upon by 1% of all the polar bears on Earth. Damien, is this science or bad science?
There's only like 100 polar bears left. I mean, all it takes is just one polar bear, right? So,
all right, so you're saying science.
So I'm saying science, yeah.
All right, and Allison.
Yeah, me too. That's like half a bear.
That's not even a full, that's a pizzly. It's a half grizzly.
I love how we're laughing at the dwindling numbers of polar bears.
Largest land carnivore on Earth is dying.
It's an honor to live through this mass extinction event.
Article number 4. A recently discovered group of crocodiles has bright orange skin that it uses as a mating signal to other crocs, indicating it may be a new species as it would be unlikely to mate with normal colored crocs. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. Because nobody wants to fuck anybody in orange Crocs.
And Allison.
Oh, God. This is bad science.
Let's go back and see how you guys did following at home and see how you did. Article number 1. New research suggests you can train mosquitoes to leave you alone by bothering them enough. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. Woo! Load up that chumbawamba.
Somebody once told me the world was gonna roll me in.
With the vodka drink and a whiskey drink.
So here's the deal, and this is what I love about this particular study. They showed that what you need to do is swat at them. You don't have to hit them. Just the perturbed air that you create when you swat them, they fucking hate it, right? And they associate smells with things that they like or don't like. And so if you swat at them, they'll associate your personal individual smell as being something they don't like, and they will leave you alone for a few days. Now, eventually that wears off, just like any Pavlovian condition, and they will come back to you. But at least for that time period, if you swat at them a bunch, they will leave you alone, which I love because it's like standing up to the bully makes them go away.
But it's like a super sneaky bully. It seems like the best course of action is if I go to Brazil, just flail constantly.
Yes, do that. That's why they dance like that.
Well, so that's when people are like, oh, they just eat me up. They just love me. They just think I taste fantastic. It's because they're not defending.
Because you're a pussy. You got to defend yourself and your family.
Sing Smash Mouth, God sakes.
I'm picturing you talking to your son one day after a mosquito bite. You got to stand up to them one day.
The real victim blaming now. Every time I see somebody with mosquito bites, I'm going to be like, couldn't fight off a mosquito, huh?
One day it's going to be malaria and you'll wish you did stand up.
One of the interesting things they did for this is they think the reason this happens is the dopamine process in the brain of the mosquito basically conditions them to it. So to test it, they actually did a genetic knockout on these mosquitoes where they took that dopamine receptor out, and those mosquitoes could not be trained to leave people alone who bothered them. So they proved the method of action.
So they're looking at their brains, but can they do it? Can they do that in court? Would you be able to?
You could do the mosquitoes brain in court. One of the things I do, like, I hate mosquitoes. It's one of those things that I could go off the face of the earth and I'd be happy. Part of the experiment, they had to glue a bunch of mosquitoes to like this piece of plastic so they could see what was going on in their brains without them moving around. And I'm just like, yeah, fuck you, mosquito. Mosquito slavery.
Oh my God.
Fun fact, the most famous genetic knockout is Chris Hemsworth.
All right. Article number 2. New research suggests that in teenage boys, the ratio of the length of their index finger to their ring finger is a good indicator of their athletic ability. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science.
Woo!
So, very interesting. If you're a man, go ahead and look at your fingers right now. Now, you can do this if you're a woman too, but it will automatically be different. If you look at your ring finger and your pointer finger, in men, usually the pointer finger is longer. However, if you are a man who's been exposed to more than average fetal testosterone, your index finger grows longer, giving you more testosterone in your body when you're a teenager.
I have no tea.
Yeah. No, you would have a lot of tea.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
But to be fair, guys like you and I, Bobby, take a real hit in the pointing department. I never felt like I've pointed as well as some of my male peers.
That is absolutely true. What's basically going on here is we've previously associated high levels of fetal testosterone with that differentiation, with the index finger being longer or very close to, sometimes even longer than, the pointer finger in young men. Testosterone is obviously a performance enhancer for young men trying to do things in athletics. But also, even if you take people who aren't athletic at that point, you take young men who aren't athletic and you give them simple squeeze tests, they have better muscles in their hands, better ability to hold and grasp, which is also very important in most sports. So they have an inherent advantage based on basically a peculiarity of their hormone levels.
How does this infusion of testosterone happen? Do you have to have a mom who's focused on sick gains?
Yeah, just constantly repping big iron at the gym. No, this is just a natural genetic thing. Some people, your hormones are usually preset in some of that ways. Now, you can do stuff with diet and activity. Obviously, that doesn't really apply as much in fetal situations. But in general, that's a genetic trait that is set for you there. So very, very interesting stuff. If you want to know whether or not your young son is going to be good, look at the ratio of his index finger to his ring finger. Article number 3, a recent carcass in Russia was dined upon by 1% of all the polar bears on Earth. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. It happened on Wrangel Island, which is a place that I love because it's also coincidentally the last holdout for mammoths. The mammoth went extinct officially on Wrangel Island in only 1600 BC. So okay. Not that long ago. It lived for a very long time, likely because it was one of the few places that humans couldn't get to. This is basically north of Siberia. It's an isolated island in a very isolated place. Every place else humans got to, they killed mammoths and mastodons rather quickly. This place they held out, it was a kind of a dwarf species. What ended up happening was a bowheaded whale beached itself and died on the outskirts of Wrangel Island, and the polar bears descended on it like this. If you go to our website, look at the picture of all these polar bears coming down onto this whale. It is fucking crazy because it is just all these little dots. And as you get closer, you realize, oh my God, those dots are the largest land carnivore on Earth coming down to eat this thing. Normally you couldn't do that because normally the polar bears would fight, especially the males would kill the young cubs, which were also there and fight the females and stuff. But they kind of have this thing where they do a truce. There's a polar bear truce whenever there's a large carcass around because they can all eat. So they're like, why fuck around? Why get angry at each other? Let's just...
Plenty for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Pass the Ducci on the left-hand side.
Until the gluttonous polar bear got there.
Right.
Just 3,000-pound, morbidly obese.
So the numbers indicate about 230 polar bears were there. Considering we have about 25,000 polar bears on the face of the Earth, that is about 1% of the total polar bear population on the face of this Earth was eating that whale. Very interesting to see. Again, go check a look at this picture on our website, because when you look at those dots and realize each one of those is just a massive killing machine, it's a little interesting. It's
nothing but whale carcass, polar bears, and bottles of Coca-Cola.
And lastly, a recently discovered group of crocodiles has bright orange skin that is used as a mating signal to other crocs, indicating it may be a new species as it would be unlikely to mate with a normal colored croc. Damien thinks this is true. Allison thinks this is false, which means one of these people got a perfect score, and this one is... bad science! Congratulations, Allison, once again! 3 perfect scores, beating Damien every time!
I want to see that article. No.
Smashing him! You can see that article on our website, Damien, at www.thesciencefaction.com.
They would totally fuck each other.
I want to see the Philosopher's Stone you have.
And that is true.
Yeah.
Alter reality.
So they did, a few years ago in Gabon, Africa, they discovered some orange crocs. And these were part of a miniature or a dwarf crocodile species that live in the area. And these ones live deep inside a cave. So these cave explorers went in there and they found these weird orange crocs. And they're like, what the fuck are these things? They had completely changed their lifestyle so that they were eating bats and like stuff that was in there. They did mate with crocs outside because what they found is in the wet season, they would come out of that cave, go outside, and kind of intermate with the other crocodiles. These crocs do not have their orange coloring. They are brightly orange colored, but these crocs do not have their bright orange coloring for mating. In fact, they're nearly blind, so they wouldn't be able to make this a mating distinction based on color because they almost can't see it.
I figure it's some sort of sun, no sun thing, right?
Not really, but close. It is their environment. It's bat guano.
Bat guano, batshit. Bat shit crazy.
Bat shit crazy. That bat guano is leaching chemicals onto this crocodile skin, which dyes them orange. And by the way, not like subtle tints of orange, like pretty fucking orange. You know, like
neon orange.
Yeah, like you could kill one of these crocs and then stick it by the side of the road to divert traffic. You know,
it's a Denver Broncos jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they come out for mating, maybe they have a little skirmish. They play shits or skins.
These crocs have developed their own lifestyle, but they are not a separate species, and they probably won't be because they they don't have that genetic isolation. You know, you need to have that genetic isolation to make that speciation happen, since they come out every single year and breed with the other crocs because they need to keep that genetic diversity going. That is unlikely to happen, but it is very interesting to see these bright orange crocs, which are, again, they're the same species. This isn't even a genotypical thing. It's not like they have genes to make them orange. This is something that's happening during their lifetime, a staining of their skin that is causing this coloration.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Allison. You beat me fair and square, unlike these victories that are terrible overlord Robert Timothy.
What a sore loser. What a sore loser.
I'm allowed to hate you for a lot of reasons. Wow. Allison rocks. You suck.
My index finger is much shorter, so I will always win.
To be fair, she was doing sick backflips this entire in between questions.
I'm going to start playing audio of Damien talking after losing I Call BS to scare away mosquitoes. All right. Thank you for joining us for Science Faction 212, where you learned about our kingdom, how brain scans might tell whether or not you're lying in court one day, how another person has ruined part of the Nazca lines, how you can train mosquitoes by bothering them, how your finger length might predict your athletic ability, how 1% of the Earth's polar bears dined on a single carcass, and why some orange crocs in Gabon aren't a separate species. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 213.
Hey, mosquito, come here. I got a Herbalife presentation for you, bro.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.